Welkom bij de leiderschapspodcast van City Life Church. Dit is Leadership Talks.
Hi everybody, welcome back to Leadership Talks. This is episode number 34 already. I'm so glad that you're listening or watching us. And I have a special guest with me again. He has been here before. This is his second time. Welcome, Dr. Scott Wilson. It's great to have you with us. You just finished a whole weekend, actually, on finances, church finances, and things like that. So maybe we can talk a few minutes about that a little bit later. A bit of I'll skip the question that I usually start with. Leadership is the problem, and leadership is the answer, because you already answered that one last episode. So we skip that one. Otherwise, people think he's forgetting it. a little bit of background, Scott. You live in Denmark now.
Yes.
You're kind of European, a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. But you're not from Europe. Tell us about a little bit your background.
Okay, well, my wife, Linda, she moved with her family to New Zealand when she was, she's born there, actually. So her two sisters moved from Denmark to New Zealand, probably in the 50s or something like this. And so there's a Danish connection there. I need to say that to explain something.
Yeah.
I was already born in New Zealand. I'm fifth generation New Zealander, so it's quite interesting to marry a foreigner. That's what she is. Yeah. And I only realized on the last visit, actually, her side of the family are actually foreigners, like we are now in Denmark. It's quite interesting how the world works. So what happened is, as I was born and raised there, I became a Christian when I was 17. I met Linda shortly after. We got married at 20, and then we chose, long set of circumstances, to move to Australia. So we both moved there, and we had a heart, both of us, to become Australians. So we were actually Australian citizens as well as New Zealand citizens. Mm. I've lived in Australia, New Zealand, 22 years, but I've lived in Australia only 18 years, and now roughly 30 years in Europe.
Yeah.
So technically, I've been more time in Europe.
We
went over to Australia, helped plant a church we were part of, then we moved. Then we went out and planted our own church, two churches actually, just out of Melbourne. And we were there for about 3 years in small towns. They worked really well and are still there today, some 40 years later. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Melbourne to start and work on a Bible college, which over a period of about 10 years became Australia's largest college. And there wasn't a Hillsong then or those types of things that had, you know, big weight behind them. So it was just us and a few others. Mm-hmm. And it was a very amazing time. I was about 38 at the time, and then we chose it's time to do something new and something different. So we actually prayed a dumb prayer, Errol, and I wouldn't recommend anybody prays it. Lord, send us to the hardest place.
Oh,
we ended up in Denmark.
In Denmark.
Which I might add is a pretty tough place to work. We have 5 million people. We have, I think, all Christians put together, free church Christians, Baptist, Pentecostal, Methodist, Anglican, and the lot, there is only 12,000. So if you consider that the Norwegians are 4.5 million people, but they have 40,000 Pentecostals. The Swedes have 7 or 8 million people, maybe a bit more, and they have hundreds of thousands of Pentecostals. Mm-hmm. It's a very hard nation to work in.
Yeah.
But that's where we landed. We started in the Bible college there, and about 25 years ago, I started to go out on my own, working with guys like you and others who were just starting churches up and coming alongside and helping them with their with their stuff. On the way, I did an education. Yeah. I left school at 14 and a half. So I left because I was rebellious rather than, my son doesn't, there's no such thing as rebellion, lad. It's just your neurons didn't fit the program or something. Had some word for it. I think it was rebellion. So I went back to university at 25 as a mature age entrance, which you can do, and did my bachelor's. And then I did a couple of master's degree, one in theology, one in organizational training in Australia. And then when I got to Europe, I enrolled in Liverpool University to an adjunct college there and did my doctoral thesis some years way back now.
Wow.
And I've enjoyed being able to write about 8 books now. And just supplementing and helping the body of Christ wherever it might be.
Yeah, leadership all over.
Yeah, leadership
building.
Correct.
So you travel in Europe, UK, and in America to help churches be on their advisory board. That's where you are with us as well.
Yeah.
For many years. We lost count for probably 10 years or more on the advisory board. So you're one of the guys that look what we do and you give input and advice. And so that's a very big help for us, to be honest, really. So thank you for all that. So there's a kind of two questions maybe today. The second one, maybe a bit of church finance. But the first, you travel a lot. Probably we think COVID is over, but I'm not so sure if COVID, probably it's not over if we talk about mental. What do you see, to make the question very clear, the new challenges that leaders have, church leaders, business leaders, post-COVID, working with people?
I think there are two essential ones I'm looking at, and the first one is linked to COVID, like you rightly said. I think my personal reflection, and having traveled a lot during COVID, I only was locked down when I could, when I had to. The rest of the time I was gone.
Yeah.
So I saw a lot what was going on in that time. And then out of COVID, I've been in America a lot, Australia, New Zealand a lot, plus Europe. And I think the DNA of the human psyche has been slightly tweaked globally. There isn't a person you meet today that hasn't been touched, tweaked, influence, changed, redirected, thinking different, whatever, from very small age to older age in the world today. I don't mean that, including you and I. Mm. We've had tweaks. I'm not saying a massive change. A tweak is just a slight turning of the screw, but it's enough for us to say society is now a little different to what it was pre-COVID.
Yeah.
You got to remember pre-COVID, we were coming into 2020, the church was booming, and we will look at boom years 2020 on. Many were ready to celebrate a decadal growth thing, and it just got closed down on everybody. If you started a business or you were heading off to your university studies, we all got affected.
Yeah.
So it wasn't one group of people, it was the whole globe. It affected everyone.
Yeah.
It's tragic, in my opinion, the tweak. I don't think it's a good tweak. I think some people think it is, but I don't. I think it's affected us the wrong way, which has created further mental health issues and further challenges. That's one area, which means leaders today in business too are navigating people's emotional realm, which we never used to have to in the workplace.
So now the boss is kind of
he's almost got to become
counselor.
Or be able to refer it on or deal with these things. And you know, that happens.
That's a big shift.
I'm not saying that's wrong. But I think that's a tweak that's different.
Yeah.
Then there's a second one, and this applies to the church, and this is hugely, hugely important to see. There's now a generational shift. There's a movie come out called The Jesus Revolution, and if you get a chance to see it, you need to go. It's about the 1970s move of God with the Jesus people. And it's a powerful movie. I think, for me, I was emotionally impacted for most of that movie as I sat there, because it was my generation.
Yeah,
us guys who are in our 65s, boomers, that was us.
Yeah,
that I was saved in 74, just after but I knew that you would remember the Jesus movement. And it powerfully changed the way we do church.
Yeah.
Most of the leaders of the church today over 65 who have shaped the last 40 to 50 years
came from that movement globally. Yeah.
So they are entrepreneurial, gung-ho, apostolic, evangelistic, you know, going out, building churches. Our church growth models, our church structures, our church forms all come from that 70s on.
Yeah, yeah.
And so does a lot of our politics and business as well, which is fine. But we are now shifting generation. It's now moving to the millennials and to some degree Gen Zers.
Yeah,
so we are not only in a tweak moment with globally with COVID, which has affected a lot of people. We're also in a moment where churches are experiencing, and you're doing this, navigating transitional change with another generation.
Yeah.
Now, not only do they have generation issues they're dealing with and working out, because laws have changed since we started and things are different today, they've got that one and they've grown up with it, so they know it. There's moral things that are happening. But there's also this other thing, the tweak of COVID.
Yeah.
You put it all together and the generation we're working with, 40 and under, are completely completely too strong. Very different to what you and I grew up with. This gung-ho, pioneering, let's get out there. They do it team-based. They less interested in the formal things, positional things. They want to get the job done, but in a totally different way.
Yeah.
It frustrates me sometimes, not because they're wrong. It's just that I did it a different way. Mm-hmm. You did it a different way. And most of the over 60s who are listening today did it a different way.
And
you're navigating that. So I think those two challenges are massive.
Yeah.
If we can get them right, the church will move forward really well. If we can do the right things, it'll all be okay.
Yeah.
But there are things to navigate there.
Yeah,
so I do a lot of transitional work now.
Yeah.
I would say about a third of my time is dealing with transitional moments. Mm-hmm. And the key is to get in really early, say 5 years before there's even a thought of having to to translate the leadership role, rather than wait till it's time, we're out. Some go well, some go not so well. Some, you know, I've seen ones where they've got the guy lined up and it's all going well, and then COVID came and changed that guy, so he's out and you've got to start again. It's really confusing and quite weird. So I think there are those two main issues that are there globally.
They're
not limited to one place.
So what you said already a little bit, what would your advice be, one or two very practical advices maybe when, you know, guys end for 50s or begin 60s wanting to work and at the end hand over the church to the next generation? One or two things that we have to keep in mind to make it work.
Well, there's a third thing that's not an issue, but the third thing is the guys like you and others who started churches way back 30 years ago have actually reached a different point in church life where multi-site, big campus, much more influence. So actually you're transitioning not a church plant now.
Mm-hmm.
You're transitioning a massive organization with multiple staff, multiple challenges. So the transition includes this ability to, you and I would say, we'll just get going and let's do it, we'll do it. Well, now they're looking to go, well, hold on, there's 30 staff here, there's five campuses, there's this going on, and I'm the guy now, and I'm 35, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
There's quite some challenges in all that. So my encouragement to guys in our age is what the next generation want is not wrong, it's just what it is for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for some, I spend a big chunk of my time thinking, why did they get it so wrong?
Mm.
They haven't got it wrong. I've found when you dig into it, they've actually got it right for where they're at.
Mm.
And they're doing a good job.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be what I'd do, wouldn't be what you'd do maybe, but they're doing it right for them.
Yeah.
And what we've got to do is support that and help them navigate. If I can get hold of a 40-year-old that's now got a church of a few hundred people, maybe transitioning into a bigger church, and help them get the rest of it right, then I'm doing what I started to do 25 years ago anyway. But to stand in the sidelines and not be critical, but just resist it is not wise. Yeah. So we have the chance to get alongside. I think the second thing with us is we've got to probably investigate around a bit more. I get the fortunate opportunity to do that because of my travels, to see what's going on, do touch points here and there, and meet different people. I was telling you a story today of different church models I've seen that you wouldn't have bumped into because you've got this locale to look after.
Yeah.
I get to see them and you go, oh wow, is that really what they're doing there? Okay, I've got to try and get up to speed. So we have to learn some stuff. On the vice versa of that, the next generation, who I find this is true of, need to be very honoring of what they're getting. And I think they are. I think they really do honor what they're receiving and what God's given. They're not, I don't find them arrogant or proud too much. But I think they're frustrated sometimes with the pace and how long it's going to take. And that's why good processes are important of transition. And I think the second thing I'd say to that generation is not everything they're growing up in is right. Just as not everything we did when we started was right. So watch the traps that are not good for you. Don't just assume because it's legal or it's right, you know, that's how it's done, that it is right. Keep to the scripture, follow the patterns, and navigate the stuff you have to. So I'd say those two things to each group. Maybe I've left some stuff out, but
very good. It's a challenge, and it's an important thing. You work a lot with this, with all the transitions, and so to both groups, you would say it's not wrong. What we have done, our generation, is not wrong. Time to move on and improve and
Definitely not wrong. Look what we've got around the world today.
Yeah.
With, in my opinion, probably in the recent church history, some of the best
because
churches
can you,
ever.
Can you understand that sometimes pastors are aged, so the next generation comes up. And some of those pastors feel a bit like, it sounds like, we're going to do it completely different. And they hear completely different. Mm. Was it that wrong? Mm. You understand a bit the, you find that a lot, I guess?
Yeah, I think some of the guys
can make the older generation a bit insecure. Really,
true. There's definitely in transition. There's a number of parts to a transition. There's the process. Mm-hmm. There's the people. If you've got process and people, they work very close together. And then there comes the pain. There's three really. Process, that can be 5 years. Mm. People they come in and out and they grow.
Yeah.
That's manageable.
Yeah.
Then there's the pain. Now, the pain is two things. The pain that the younger guy gets when he figures out, okay, I'm carrying this now, which is where they want to disperse it a bit more. This is a heavy weight. They've watched it in their own past and maybe pay heavy price.
Yeah.
So they don't want that pain, so they have to disperse the weight a bit. Mm-hmm. The second part of that pain is the pain the transitional pastor has when they've done the process with the people, but then a year later, maybe less, they go, what the heck have I done? Mm. I'm 67, I'm 68, I'm 70, I've got nothing now. I haven't got a platform. Mm. It's the emotional realm.
Yeah.
And that one's the problem for our generation, whereas the pain of weight is the problem for the next generation.
Yeah. Very well
see, the next generation are navigating things me and you never navigated. Let's take some of the rules and laws on how it looks with moral issues today. Mm. Yeah. I won't go into them, we know them. Mm. They've got to navigate that. We didn't.
No.
We actually were able to preach what we believed and not worry.
Yeah.
They can't.
Yeah.
That's a thing. That's a weight, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Then there's a weight of government law and all the way. I don't know if you've looked at this, but I if you want to, and if you're listening, you could do this. You look at the UK bullying laws now. The laws that are in place for bullying, I'm telling you now, I wouldn't even want to run a company in the UK. Two major political figures already have been charged with bullying, and it's the most minor thing. Mm. They blame the left-wing bureaucrats who they inherited are using these laws against, and I think it's partly true. But I'm looking at the bullying laws and going, who would want to run a coffee shop today with those laws in place?
Yeah,
they're ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
When you and I look at them, maybe a 40-year ago is fair enough. Mm. I don't get them.
Mm.
And most of the people I talk to don't get them. Yeah. They've got to navigate that. We never did.
No.
And that's consequently why maybe we jumped into some stuff we didn't know was serious, and now you've got reflections back. Well, it's too late. It's like taking David and unpacking his life in a now moment and going, David was a really bad guy. No, he lived thousands of years ago. That's what his realm was.
Yeah.
You can't apply it to today.
Yeah.
But people actually do.
Yeah.
This is an interesting bit. I heard some Gen Zers sitting around doing a Bible study with their pastor, and he was doing the life of David. He's our hero, the man after God's own heart, blah, blah, blah. And they got to the bit, you know, where he spied Bathsheba across and the husband and all that.
Yeah.
Oh, we hate this guy. He's horrible. Look what he did to that. Look what he did there. No, he's a hero. He did, you know, no hero to me. I don't want to hear any more. And I, you know, when I unpacked that in my head, I thought, oh, fair enough, today.
Yeah.
When we were around, it was like he's our hero because he had a heart after God's own heart. Isn't that an amazing thing, though?
Yeah.
Quite
an
interesting change there. Who's right?
Yeah.
Both are.
Yeah.
There's nobody wrong in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just personal preference, how laws changed, what culture's doing. David is not seen as a hero to Gen Zers when you look at how he performed, if they apply their modern context. If you take that away, he's a hero. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's crazy. Those different
challenges.
World.
Different world, different things.
In the few minutes we've left, you were teaching on principles, financial principles, and you were very free in mentioning tithing. We only have a few minutes, but tithing, what's the heart of the tithing? Is it still happening? Is it still important? Is it still, some people would say, really? Are you doing that? You mean like 10%? Just a few thoughts on that.
You can't look at tithing as a single thing. It's a holistic thing.
Hmm.
So just to take, are you tithing really, which is what people have said to me too, is they're not looking holistically. holistically, as I said this morning, it's about sacrificial giving to some degree. At least that's how it starts. At least giving, it's rooted to the gospel. It's about giving. Tithing and offerings and sacrificial giving are the holistic approach of what the gospel is in our lives, rather than tithing being separated from that. If I just tithed and stopped there and didn't ever do an offering and then never gave sacrificially, I haven't been holistic in my financial understanding.
So
it's a holistic thing, and it's a danger to say, really just tithing, but I get that.
Yeah.
Because I'm holistically transformed by God and living in a relationship with Him, then it holistically affects my finances.
Yeah.
Tithing is the starting point of the rest of it.
Yeah.
So in other words, if I generously give, and I'm giving on average 3% a year, which is, that is by no means generosity to me. Sorry, 3% a year, 5% even. 10% though, that's tough ask. Then offerings on top? Well, if you do an offering on top of it, now you're talking generosity, aren't you? So do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a holistic package.
Yeah.
Can't be seen on its own.
Yeah.
It is incorporated into the message of the gospel implicitly. So I think because it's giving, God's giving, and it's like when you get baptized, as I said, you give away yourself, you become dead in Christ, new life. And then it touches your wallet because you're now dead there, so you're dead there too. There's some people who have been baptized not dead there yet.
Yeah.
That wallet, you're not touching that.
Yeah,
but aren't you dead?
Yeah.
I'm not touching it. God's touching it.
Yeah.
No, he can't touch that one. And you can't either. Tricky stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
So for me, after again, we've been doing this 50-odd years, so we just done it all our
you
lives.
You said that today. Yeah? You've been doing the tithing. You've been doing that for 50
since
years.
Since I was first saved, Never stopped. More.
And you can really testify that that
life,
it works.
It is the
you
right
challenge this morning. You challenge the young people, start doing it, and after 50 years, like me, you'll say.
Oh, less. It's not 50 years. Now, when I say it works, I'm not referring to financial gain. I'm referring to giving yourself holistically into God's kingdom, and one part of it is your finances works.
Yeah, yeah.
It's living the gospel out rather than. Well, I'm backslidden, I'll tithe, it should work. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's a holistic thing.
Yeah.
And when you holistically imbibe Christ in your life, and it includes tithing, it works.
Yeah, right, that way, then it works. Yeah.
Actually, in the secular world, business people do this, Jewish communities still do it, there's truckloads of people who are tithing who are not Christians, and it works.
Really?
Yes. You need to Google that one.
Non-Christians that tithe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's common practice in many business talks and forums today that endorse tithing or 10%. I'll get them out for you if you need to, but they're there. Anybody watching can Google that.
If this is all new to people, maybe not a Christian a long time, last question. Are there some steps
to it
towards doing the tithing, giving 10%?
Well, often when you become a Christian, your world economically is very bound up already, especially if you're a student or that age, and you've got high commitments, maybe debts. So the question comes, I can't, it's impossible, I haven't got it.
Yeah.
So my answer to that is start somewhere and work. I did that because, as I said, and I'll say it again here, not to say it for the reason of saying it, but it's a lifestyle for me. I chose when I was 65 to be giving 50% of income. All I did to do that was every year put it up a few percent. So I'd say to a person who's tight budget starting out, start with one.
Yeah.
You watch what'll happen. Go to two. Then you jump to five. You'll get there.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. It works.
Yeah.
So you'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm a bit afraid of doing the pragmatic thing on tithing because I think what we've heard in the past is if you tithe, God will bless. If you don't tithe, God won't bless. And I don't like that. I think it's more about God not changing who he is. Malachi 3:6, I am the God who changes not. Jesus is God. He didn't change. He endorsed it.
Yeah.
Matthew 23.
Yeah.
And then Paul endorsed it too. He said nothing to, people argue there's no tithing in the New Testament because Paul was silent. Well, guess what? Sunday school's not mentioned in the New Testament too, but we love Sunday school, don't we, parents with children?
Yeah. Well, it is mentioned, as you said.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah.
Matthew 22.
If you read my books, iclm.dk is the webpage. You can buy them there.
Okay.
I've written a book on tithing. It's probably the most recent modern one out there.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Scott. Our time is up, and it's been very, very good to talk to you here. And I can tell that you have so much experience. You see the world that we live in, you understand the generations. And so it's been a big blessing to have you with us this whole weekend. And already for many, many years as one of the advisors for City Life Church as a whole, for me and Matilda and our key people, key leaders. So thank you very much.
My honor.
Okay, ik ga even naar het Nederlands. Wij doen dit elke vierde dinsdag van de maand. Leadership Talks. Je kan luisteren, je kan kijken. Als je het leuk vindt, laat het ons weten. Vertel het aan anderen. En volgende maand, ga ik praten met Joelle Nava. Zij heeft een hele hoge positie in het ziekenhuis hier vlakbij als werk. En heeft een enorme grote alfa-organisatie opgezet hier in de kerk met echt heel veel vrijwilligers. En ik ga haar vragen, leiderschap. Deze dame weet hoe het moet. Ze weet hoe ze moet motiveren met heel veel vrucht. Dus dat volgende maand. We zien je graag weer snel.